I have most of the words floating around in my head. I just have to find them.
Oh, his words. Wow.
Not a lot of them. And it's up there with me. I'll see if I can find it on KB, remember?
KB. Yes. KB. That's the first thing Jim said when I told him that. The latest state of Rosie's is probably not changed from the last latest state of Rosie's. The sign is still there, and the windows are still there, and the door's still there. But it doesn't look like it's blacked anymore. It looks like it's just empty now.
Well, maybe we should take it over. Just go in there some night and do it. Spot is right, yeah.
It's just waiting. It's just waiting. Someone's going to buy that place. With any luck, they won't turn it into the boiler room.
There's nothing wrong with the Rosie except for
me. Yeah. It was the wrong name.
Yeah. What, Rosie's?
You know what's funny is that if they had named it Rosie O'Grady's and there'd been no alcohol, I would have gone there. But somehow changing the name was kind of like saying this is not Rosie's anymore, not just like no alcohol, but this is not Rosie's.
Wrong with it.
Well, we're talking Rosie's. We're talking about Rosie's. I saw it. Well, I passed Rosie's on the bus, and the sign is still there.
Oh, yeah.
It's still empty.
You're talking about the other place.
Yeah. Rosie O'Grady's.
Yeah.
But anyway, I'm hoping someone will buy it.
The boiler room?
Yeah, that was terrible. That was.
Was that the vegetarian place?
Yeah, that was. Heavy metal vegetarian poetry night or something.
You got it.
It wasn't terrible, maybe in and of itself as a theory, but in that location, I just thought, man, this is not going to work.
No, it's probably never.
Yeah, wrong town. Quite possibly wrong state.
I have been lately reading something I really appreciate. It's been the critiques of the French deconstructionists. It's an attack on their style of thinking.
I think kind of like their writing is an attack on their style of thinking.
Well, it is intelligent writing. I mean they're French writers and thinkers.
Oh, that are attacking their.
That are attacking Derrida and
Foucault and the other
Lacan.
Yeah.
Another, you know, they're basically, you know, word players.
Yeah, they suck.
Big time. I get a full dose of them
Oh, really?
In a seminar.
Ooh.
Yeah, it was on the history of science of all things.
Yeah, they infiltrate everything.
Yeah.
They're like cockroaches.
I never really encountered them.
Yeah.
I mean, the author, the books we read were full of Derrida references to him. It's like, I had a queasy feeling reading them.
Yeah.
And it's like, very uneasy, very, yeah. I mean, they were really playing around with the sources.
Yeah.
And it's like, dude.
They're incredibly popular right now in English department programs.
Yeah, well, yeah, I can on English and history. But
history and science.
Anything that deals with written word.
Yeah. Yeah.
They're gonna have an influence because of the,
don't trust it, don't believe it, it lies, it's phony,
yeah,
it's foolish.
That's their basic creed.
There is no basis, there is no reality, there is no this.
Reality, there is no criteria.
Yeah.
There are multiple interpretations, equally valid.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's the
level playing field, the postmodern creed. Yeah, they all suck.
Yeah.
Are any of them alive yet? Still?
Derrida's still alive. Foucault died about 10 years ago.
Good.
And I've been working on my research paper, which I'm going to complete from the advisory board. Right. And he's been in Hungary for years. So I've had the time to student all this over. And I finally begun to make certain relations. My research paper is concerned with German social democrats, the SPD, and how they address the question of nationalism. I'm basically working from Tibet. German, particularly in pre-World War I period, or right before World War I, the German socialists, because of the heady days of July and August 1914, they went along with the militarists of Wilhelm. And the question, the answer as to why that has always been the case is because they're Germans, their nationalism is strongly ethnic-based, and fatherland, that carried over, of course, into World War II, and the Nazis, that's been a long line argument. I'm looking again at particularly Edward Bernstein and how he addressed the issue of nationalism. It's qualitatively different from the rabid ethnic militaristic nationalism as it was expressed in
Early social democracy.
Early social democracy.
Probably
toward the end, they've been sort of lumped together because, you know, they caved in to the militarists Kaiser and following through, you know, all the, you know, the socialists, the German socialists and socialists of other nations basically forgetting their fraternal, you know, proletarian brotherhood and marching off to war for their particular nations.
America happened too. Yeah.
And of course, because of the fall of communism, the Bolshevik Revolution, they've never recovered. And I think only now, I think, once they drop off 70 years of mental collapse, dead thought. I mean, I think the left has to make some sort of comeback, and it's got to drop off a lot of dead weight to do that. But I'm looking at nationalism in particular. I see Bernstein advocating what Todorov calls, or makes the distinctions between ethnic nationalism and civic nationalism. Clearly, Bernstein is, I see, advocating a civic nationalism, less based, it's more on rights under the law as opposed to rights as you have those rights simply because you're part of the group, the Kaiser was, the language of the time strongly reflects social Darwinism and the notion of racism, the conflict between the races, the conflict between the German, not Aryan race at the time, but the German race, Germanic races, and the Slavic races, and the conflict between the darker races in the south, or the oriental races in the east. I mean, the language of the time, if you read some of these articles that they've written, is so suffused and
social Darwinism. It's taken for granted that you know what they're talking about. You accept the basic preconception of social Darwinism. There is this kind of thing.
Okay.
And, well, I'm sorry. I mean, but that's the area I'm trying
sounds
to get
exciting.
Into. I'm trying to make distinctions here. Okay. Granted, they did collapse.
Yeah.
You know, they did cave in 1914, but prior to that, there was a qualitative distinction.
Well,
where they basically took over from the liberals because the liberals in Germany collapsed after this point. So you now unify the nation under war.
Well, the deadline for the first issue of Seneca is April 14th.
Okay, I won't get my paper.
I'm making concessions.
Yes.
Yeah.
Well,
you made some concessions.
He made some concessions, but
not just
yeah, but he's satisfied that they didn't have any power.
No, that's
just that they didn't have any power in the Reichstag. I mean, he made terrible decisions.
Yeah. That was good of him. I mean,
he was a good politician. Bismarck was a great politician. I'm not condemning him for it. I mean, but to what? I'm thinking he's the major. Ike is the major. Is one of the historians and biographers of Bismarck who really condemned him and saw, you know, the rise of Nazism.
When you were in the courts over the years,
he wrote during the war.
Well, that's why.
Yeah, that's why he did. But I mean, you saw Bismarck's basic elimination of the German liberalism, German greatest liberalism, as being, you know, eliminating another voice, which sort of brought the nation over to this militaristic unification.
But isn't that like just kind of like German rule? Isn't that the way German politics works? It's like, it's not Bismarck's fault. That's just.
No, it's not.
That's just Austro-Hungarian or.
I want to keep talking. The meeting's begun. It hasn't only begun. All right.
Jim?
You need glasses.
I'm going to end $30 with a pair of glasses.
Look how many guys in town is far and say, well, can I have a glass for you?
What are we having?
They want Michelob, we want Bass. You can buy what you want.
Yeah.
If you ask my opinion.
Yeah.
Bass.
What do they have here?
If you ask my opinion, Bass. They have Bass, Bass. That's it, Michelob.
They only used to have Michelob. I mean,
Bass.
Bass.
Life has improved.
Michelob's okay. You don't have to choose. If you have straws, I prefer Bass.
All right.
I prefer Michelob over Budweiser.
Oh, that's what they had before Michelob.
Yeah.
They've accelerated.
Yeah, I mean, Michelob's okay, but it's not your beer of choice.
All right, do it.
Yeah.
Get it. Whatever you want. Okay.
Budweiser, I looked at it that
way. Yeah. Okay.
That's fine.
Yeah.
It's good when he gets one.
Yeah.
A couple of verses of pinball isn't usually bring us back to the desired reality.
Jarhead.
You would go like that to me. Yeah. It's okay.
If I were to reveal to you, Ron, my secret dream, it would be that. I would wish for you. I would wish you part of a new literary renaissance in this country. I think we're overdue.
I just wanted to look a little.
We haven't had one in a long time.
No, more.
And that's my secret dream. Because we really need one.
Not since the 1950s.
Yeah. We really need one. I mean, in the 60s, what happened in the 60s, in my opinion, is that the poets of the 60s played music.
Yeah.
So you kind of had a literary renaissance, but it was a musical renaissance.
Yeah.
And we're always drawing, you know, singers are drawing sustenance from that. But
poetry,
we haven't had a literary renaissance.
Well,
and
I don't know what you're talking about.
Poetry slam. Okay, I mean, poetry, it's nice if poetry's in the news, but slam is the wrong idea. contest prizes. That just looks wrong.
Probably not.
It's wrong for me. Maybe it's right for other people. They get to read their stuff, but it's just.
I'm kidding.
It's a competition. It's like the golf show.
Yeah, that's
it's appealing to the worst part of American culture, the competing part, not like the ascending part.
Let me raise Derrida again. It's a deconstructionist attitude.
Yeah. Level playing field.
It's a level playing field.
Yeah, no.
Quality being judged is just simply, spot off anything.
They all suck.
Well, I mean, once in a while you might want to call someone genuine.
Yeah, there's some good poetry read, but I hate the concept.
Yeah.
I hate the concept.
It's like the Wrestling Federation of Poetry.
Yeah, very good. My idea was the Garland Show. Because I witnessed one, and it was like rounds and then points and judges.
I went to a poetry slam one time over Borders.
Okay, how did it go?
There is a woman who read a...
Diaphragm or something?
Ode to her diaphragm.
Yes. Ode to her diaphragm. Oh, yeah. Okay.
Do you want us to do a jigsaw now,
Okay, I have an answer for you. I have a relatively long thing, so how about I read and then play and then read?
This is
grand finale, sort of. Some silly guy with long hair once sang a song about good guys and bad guys and crooks and criminals and doctors and lawyers and folks like you and me. Well, I guess I must be a folk because I'm not any of those other things. I like exciting things, except they always have to do with being scared and running away a lot. But still, here I am, the guy who writes the newspaper of Bag's End, which is a lot of it about me going on other guys' tricky adventures. But this time around, I have been the tricky one, not wanting to do my newspaper always in the same place about the same thing. And I runned away, too. I runned away to Imagiana on Sheila's bunny cycle, even to see my friend Princess Chrissy for help. Well, we danced to a song, and Chrissy told me to stand when I asked her what to do. I standed, but was confused. What do you mean, Chrissy? I asked. Chrissy said, Algernon, if you don't want to write about Betsy and Sheila, then don't. Stand firm. Radical advice to a confirmed cowardist. But they will take turns knocking my block off, I cried. Stand up for yourself, said Chrissy. But they want myself to do what they say. Stand tall. But I'm too short to stand tall. Princess Chrissy gave me the littlest of kisses on my nose bone and said, Algernon, stand. Then she led me to the door and told the bunny cycle in a Sheila-ish voice to bring me back home. That's how she did it. So I was raced back to the bunny family apartment and the Beatrix parked in the exact same spot as before I left. Now, Chrissy is a smart guy, and I know she wouldn't want me to get hurt or pounded or something, or nothing. She told me to stand, so I figured I better stand. But where? Mills Porch? No, I usually sit there. Where? I walked into the hallway and stood there. Start somewhere with standing somewhere, I guess. I didn't wait for something to happen for very long, because the lights got dark, and I knew these special lighting tricks to be the work of Betsy Bunny Pillow. Algernon Beagle, Her Eminence Betsy Bunny Pillow awaits your unworthy presence with little patience. Risk not her smothering wrath, said a chorus of allies' voices. They talked slowly like they were reading the speech off of a piece of paper. Trembling in my paws, I stood and said, Tell Betsy I don't think I have room in my newspaper for her. Tell her I am too busy to play with her. Boy, the allies in the darkness runned away quickly. So far, so good. Then I heard a group approach. Sneela, Alex, and Ali. Alex was... God, Bags In versus Beavis and Butthead. Oh, help, help. Then I heard a group approach. Sneela, Alex, and Ali. Alex was talking bump words real fast, and Ali couldn't keep up translating his fake bumps into real English. There you are, Beagle. Where have you been? Sneela looked grumpy and annoyed, but I was surprised that it wasn't me about. I thinked hard, of course. Alexander was driving her crazy with his bump stuff. Sneela doesn't like someone else being a big shot on her journeys like her. I thinked hard. I think so hard that I think I whimpered. Sneela, we can't go find Alex's pretend, I mean native bump lands, because there is an emergency and only the King of Bagsin can help. Sneela puffed out her little funny chest all importantly and said, sorry, kid, to Alex as we left. When we were away from Alex and Ali, Sneela said, what's the emergency? Now, at long last, it was my turn to be the tricky one. You have to give me a ride on your bunny cycle to Magiana to thank me for saving you from that crazy bumping relative of mine. Sneela looked at me with wonder. She didn't do no words, though. We walked back to her room and got in her bunny cycle. Hey, who's been messing with my Beatrix? She yelled. I said with the dregs of my trickiness, maybe there is no emergency. I will go tell Alex if you like. Thwarted, Sneela told her bunny cycle to take us to Imagiana. We were roaring down the hallway when who should appear all big and fluffy and scary but a very mad Bitsy Bunny Pillow. Time to let someone else stand all brave. Sneela roared right toward Betsy, who stood her ground. There was a big crash. I don't remember what happened next, because I woke up in my own bed. My adopted mommy named Pat was sitting on the edge of my bed, holding my paw and smiling at me. Hi, little one, she said all nice to me. Hi, adopted mommy, said me. You have a gift to look at, she said. She is a nice big gray bunny. She handed me a book. I opened up and saw lots of English words in neat rows on every page. It's a dictionary, I said. A special one, said Pat. Who's it from? Pat pointed to some writing on the inside of the front cover. Nice handwriting that looked sort of familiar. And Pat read it to me. Dear Algernon, I am glad you stood like I told you. I hope you like this gift. It's especially for you because you acted like you. Love, Chrisica, Princess, Beagle Lover, REM Fan, and so on. It's called Words Found in the Weeds, and it's about words almost nobody knows about or remembers, said Pat, reading the cover. Hey, said me all happy, I like words, and I like weeds. What a good present. Pat smiled at me. Chrissy thinks you earned it. I asked Pat to read me some weed words, and she did. I found out quarter cousin means friend, and farrago is a jumble, and scribe means to crawl on all fours. I guess I am a scribing guy, I said, and Pat laughed. Words Found in the Weeds is a really good book. I recommend it to all my loyal readers. But I didn't know if he was still teaching.
He'll be around for a while.
Well, Phil says he sees him a lot at the school, so that suggests he's probably still teaching.
Oh, yeah, he's still teaching, because I see him walking back and forth to the school all the time.
Doing these lectures.
Yeah, as he walks.
As he comes, yeah.
He's great.
Yeah, he's like,
he's great. We get rides in the car, and he gets in the car, and that's his mark. That's on his furniture. He do the same thing. He's doing a lecture in the back seat.
No, I'm doing a lecture in the back seat.
He wanted us to go to his church. I don't know, some of his strange church. Church. But those people have all these churches they want to go to. Yeah, when
you get older, you're like, you begin to face your reality.
Yeah, you better do something about it.
When French is cracked open before I even lose my cool. And if I smile, please don't come at me before I laugh and act like a fool. And if I want anything evil, put your fingers down my throat. And if I shiver, please give me a blanket.
Occasional companions at Fair Rosie O'Grady's on an evening is the grand Scotch-Irish gentleman, James T. Burke III.
All right.
Known really for the taking of endless libations, of leadership in song and discourse, and genial conviviality, Mr. Burke has been a favorite at Old Rosie O'Grady's for a good while. Strangely, on this evening, as on others, at a certain point in the night, Mr. Burke would disappear from the bar for a few moments. It is hard to say where Jim goes, but it is remarked that Mr. Burke is found particularly tranquil and jovial upon his return.
And it's entitled simply Vacant. Sweeping breezes, hurricanes, but all resists. Spoonful stride spray descends the hillock, past the place of hounds, and comes to rest in a miniature galaxy of color and black. Today I have come to the helm of the bay and see all.
You gonna say when they call him?
Got a reservoir of love, and there's a lot more that should be thinking of. Got a reservoir of dreams, and all this night. Reservoir of love, reservoir of dreams, all these lies it seems. Up in all the trees, like a squirrel on the branches, never can have a job, never can have a job for too long. Gotta start hopping, gotta hop in with jobs, like a squirrel who's in the air, and I'm way up there looking down. Outside of it all, don't really care. They got a reservoir of love.